Welcome to the RSP Cast. This is episode number 87. And if you hear construction in the background, that's right, my friends. They are moving a water tower in my county. And I have literally like a little kid's vehicle dream in the backyard of my house right now. But you got to take the good with the bad. You get a new house. You got the nice view. Well, they got to do a little bit of construction here and there to address some things. That's fine. You get Dwayne McFarlane and I together. That's hopefully the good. You got to hear this a little bit of a background noise. You know, hopefully it's not as loud for you as it is for me. But Dwayne, welcome back to the show and welcome back from vacation, man.
Thank you. Under construction. That's how my feet felt after long days at Disney and Universal. Yeah, my feet have never been so tired in my life.
Well, listen, one guy that we're going to definitely be watching who probably said that at least 2 to 3 seasons ago was one Russell Wilson when it came to how much he had to avoid pressure over the course of 2015, 2016, and 2017. But it seems like last year they turned things around in Seattle. So we're going to start off with them and talk about the Seattle Seahawks. And hopefully that will offset some of the constant drilling that you hear in the background here. I've found that music has been helpful, but for right now, hopefully you can again part with taking the good with the bad as we get to talk about the Seahawks, who are a very compelling team, considering that, you know, they had a great 1-2 punch at running back, and really you could even call it a 1-2-3 punch to an extent with the promising Rashad Penny. Now it's Carson and Penny show. How much of it will be for each player? And then we have Doug Baldwin moving on, but that means Tyler Lockett, who might be an even more dynamic player than Doug Baldwin, is getting moved into Doug Baldwin's spot in the slot in 3 receiver sets, which means a lot of two-way goes for a very dynamic player who he and Russell Wilson had, what, like a perfect quarterback rating on deep throws last year? I mean, that's crazy. And then you add in, speaking of deep threats, you get DK Metcalf, who is, you know, basically like a, you know, he's built kind of like a lion with a jetpack on his behind, you know, and that's going to be interesting to see, you know, what we can get out of DK Metcalf. And Will Disley started off on fire last year and got hurt. You know, will they have tight end play in Seattle? You know, let's tackle all of this. What is it that comes to mind to you when you're looking at the Seahawks team that you find intriguing? And what are some points that when you're doing your projections that really stand out?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we saw with, you know, Seattle last year is they definitely went back to that run heavy approach, right? So you kind of got to start there, and it makes sense. You bring in Brian Schottenheimer last season as your new offensive coordinator, and Daryl Bevel had moved on. And if you remember, you know, Daryl Bevel had also been very run heavy for a period. And then they kind of went into this phase where it was like, you know, we have Russell Wilson, let's throw the ball more. And it's not that Wilson didn't perform well, he actually did. But if you look at the last 2 seasons that Daryl Bevel was with the Seahawks, it was 58% pass and 42% run, right? Prior to that, it had been, this is crazy, prior to that, it had been 49% pass, 46, 45, 43. I mean, those are insane numbers you never see. Last year, 44% pass, 56% run. So Pete Carroll has a formula that he wants to instill, and Brian Schottenheimer was obviously a perfect fit, right, as someone that you would want to bring in that matches to what the head coach wants to do. And they saw good results from it. What's funny is, you know, in those 2 seasons before when Wilson was flinging the ball everywhere, and again, he was actually doing well while doing it. We'll get to him here in a second. But if you look at it, they scored 22 points per game in 16 and 23 points per game in 17. Last year, they jumped to 27 points per game. Guess how many points per game they were scoring when they used to run the ball all the time? 26, 25, 26, 26.
Yep.
So Pete Carroll is on to something. I know many folks think he's, you know, backwards and, you know, this is the passing era. But for the Seahawks, you know, you think about kind of the Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells kind of way of thinking, you know, you be the best team that this team can be. it's clear that with Pete Carroll, you know, he's got a formula that works whenever they run the ball. So I think that's the biggest thing that jumped out to me when I began studying the Seahawks this year. You know, Vegas has them at 8.5 wins on the season, which is it's typical for a team that wants to play this way. We'll talk about another one here in a moment, not this run heavy, but when we talk about the Panthers later today, that's another team where you've got a coach that likes to, you know, he likes to manage tight margins. They're coaches that want to get ahead. They want explosive plays through the passing game. Yet they want to control the game through the running game and their defense. And Pete Carroll's figured out how to do that. So I think we're going to see more of that this year. I think as far as, you know, you hit on a couple of really good things there. And we'll jump into the skill position here, players here, you know, in a few moments. But I am very excited to see what Tyler Lockett will do out of the slot, you know, taking over that role for Doug Baldwin. But I think the biggest thing is jumping over into, you know, Russell Wilson. You know, and before we go there, I mean, right now I've got the Seahawks overall. They're not a team that's going to, you know, run a ton of plays. Over the last several years with Pete Carroll, they're typically between 950 and 975. I've got them projected for 950 plays this year, 48% pass and 52% run. So a little bit more pass than last year, just because, you know, it's hard, Matt, to project. Now, this team is one where you can do it, but it's really hard to project 44% passing for a team because that's one of the most insane outliers that, you know, you'll see in this age of football. The other one, obviously, we've already covered is the Ravens. So, but if you jump over, you know, we start talking a little bit more about, you know, Russell Wilson and the big plays. That is what the MO of Russell Wilson is. And, you know, for people interested in fantasy, it's kind of it's really a hard one to wrap your mind around because typically quarterbacks that only get to attempt, you know, 400 to 450 passes are worthless when it comes to fantasy. Right. Russell Wilson, though, his touchdowns are insane. So he threw 35 last year on a touchdown per attempt, Matt. That's 8.2%. I don't have the whole league in front of me. My guess is that's second to Pat Mahomes. Matter of fact, yeah. I remember it is. It's second to Pat Mahomes in the league. And it's nothing new for Russell Wilson. So he was a 6% the year before when they threw it so much. The year before that, when they threw it so much, 3.8%. Notice what the running game is doing for this offense. Yes, the yardage may go down. The attempts are going down. But it's creating the explosive plays. Russell Wilson is superb at realizing when that exact moment is to get in the right play and burn a defense deep. And then when you pair that together with his accuracy that he has down the field to make those plays happen. And you talked about Tyler Lockett and how insane his efficiency was last year. You know, if you go break him down, you look at post and goes and things like that, much, much higher percentage, you know, efficiency than the rest of the league on those types of routes. And a lot of that all comes back to Russell Wilson. You know, the other thing Wilson does that Carroll loves based on the way that they like the formula that they have is he doesn't turn the ball over. He's elite. I mean, he never throws over 2%, you know, his intercepts per attempt are never over 2%. His highest years were the 2 years they threw the ball most besides his rookie year, which was 2%. But last year, only 16%. When you're throwing a touchdown pass on 8.2% of your passes and you're throwing a pick on 1.6% and you have a defense like they do, it's easy to see how, you know, this works. It works. I think it's the perfect marriage, really. I think you look at Bill Belichick, and as brilliant as he is, I give a lot of credit to Tom Brady, right? When you bring those two together, I think you have the same thing here. You have a guy, Pete Carroll, that came in, he knew what he wanted to do, and he got the perfect match, Matt, and Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's all great information. And what I'd like to add to that is maybe a narrative that I think pieces together what happened when they threw the ball so much, because we need to remember that the Seattle Seahawks were coming off of really one play away from being a two-time Super Bowl winner 2 years in a row. And they had great defenses. One of the best defenses of all time, if you just put them in a vacuum of that span of period. And I think what they were trying to do was to keep that team together as long as possible that year after. And the problem was, is that they had injuries along their offensive line, or they had guys leave along that offensive line. And they felt like that was the area that they could afford to lose the most. They didn't want to lose their secondary. They didn't want to lose their linebackers. They didn't want to lose the pass rush. They certainly didn't want to lose Marshawn Lynch if they could keep him. But when they did, it was kind of like, let's keep, you know, we want to keep these receivers together. Russell Wilson can buy time in the pocket. Let's see if we can use a coach that we feel like is an expert at piecing together offensive lines. Maybe he's had some past experience in Tom Cable being able to do that. Didn't work out so well. It worked out well 1 year. It was the year they ended up going to the game, you know, going to the conference championship against Carolina, and Russell Wilson just kept coming at them. And nearly bringing them back, you know, bringing the Seahawks back from a very deep deficit to nearly win that game. But their offensive line was weak. And the following year, Tom Cable, you know, couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again in terms of that offensive line. And it had been a mess, and it's the running game suffered. And as a result of that, you know, as good as Russell Wilson is at creating outside of structure, you do not want a player consistently having to create outside of structure because it wears them out. It's also a low, you know, you want plays at work, you know, and you can't, you know, your percentages of success outside of structure are always going to be lower than they are inside of structure if you're going to really do a good sample size in that sense. But his is higher, his outside of structure plays may be higher than the rest of everybody, than maybe the rest of the league quarterbacks. But
what's insane is his ability to still be accurate, right? And
yeah.
And his completion percentage on those types of plays. And if you look at, you know, his average depth of target last year was a 10, and he still had a 66% completion rate. That is far. And look, I love Drew Brees, but that's far more impressive than the 70% that Drew Brees puts up whenever you average, you know, 7 yards.
Yeah. Russell Wilson in my eyes is one of the three best quarterbacks in the league. I mean, I don't know if I'd pick a player ahead of Russell Wilson. And I've felt that way probably for the past 4 years when it comes to watching his game. And people are always making an excuse about the height and he can't see over the line or he can't find this, or they do certain things to set him up well. Well, they do certain things to set up every quarterback well, you know, if you're going to be honest with yourself about that. And it's not like they do anything that's extremely difficult in Seattle to have to set Russell Wilson up, you know, in a way that's like, oh, it's taxing to the team to have Russell Wilson, but it's worth it. You know, it's more
he does things though, Matt, that I'm with you. I think there's an argument that he's in the top three. I think it's a lock. There's an argument you could put him number one. You know, I mean, Pat Mahomes will have something to say about that. He's still a little bit young, but what Russell Wilson does on an annual consistent basis with deep passing, it's unheard of. It doesn't happen. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, I've got this color coded grid in front of me where I can look at just deep passing. He's in the top 10 to 5% every single year. No quarterbacks don't do that. They're usually, what you'll see is they have a year where it's up and then it'll fall back down a little bit. And it may still be, you know, in the top 25% of the league, but to see a guy,
Drew Brees.
but to see a guy like this, 48.5% completion rate, last year on passes over 20 yards. The year before it was a 36. That was his lowest. But listen to this. Before that, every year, 48, 46, 40, 45, 44. You chart plays, Matt. You know how he has what you call pinpoint accuracy, 25 and 35 yards down the field.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly what you're looking for out of quarterbacks is, you know, you want to see a certain level of that. And if he's, and what percentage of that is pinpoint, did you say? 25%, you know, down, you're talking about 25, 30 yards down the field. I mean, that's pretty high.
Yeah. Know? Like his completion percentages, I've gone back as far back as I can track this. There's no one that's ever put up these kind of numbers year after year. It's not close. Like, I mean, there's not even a person I can name to you that I would say, well, in second place, there's this guy. And he's kind of, there's no one. He is alone.
and that includes those years where he's running like a point guard, you know, outside the pocket and flicking the ball in ways that may not be as crazy as Patrick Mahomes did, but in ways that still you're like, how did he roll to the left and find that receiver and hit him so perfectly on that play? You know, it wasn't to the extreme of Mahomes, but enough that you look at and go, that looked like, you know, that looked like the equivalent of a point guard at half court who was running the fast break and dished that ball all the way across the width of the court to the baseline for the guy to hit the open jumper.
It's amazing.
I mean, that's like what Russell Wilson does. And so
when you put, just to kind of, you know, isolate that component, so listen to the contrast of the amount of pressure he receives. He's under pressure 40%, 40%, 42%, 42%, 46%, 44%, and 40%. So he is one of the top two passers every year in deep passing, yet he's also one of the top five most pressured quarterbacks every year. Put those two things together, it honestly, it's kind of mind-boggling how he does it.
Yes. So my friend Sigmund Bloom, I don't care whether you hate him, shut up, because he's good, you know. But no, that's my joke with Bloom, because Bloom is not a Russell Wilson fan or an Aaron Rodgers fan. You know, he doesn't like their personalities. I don't really care about personalities. All I care about is what's happening on the field at this point. And I love me some Russell Wilson on the field. He is just an amazing, amazing quarterback, and that underscores it. So
he's the complete opposite of Derek Carr. He does everything well. He plays under pressure. He plays when he's kept clean, he's elite. When he's under pressure, he's one of the top three quarterbacks in the league. Deep passing, he's one of the top three quarterbacks in the league. Play action, he's one of the top 10 quarterbacks every year in the league. I mean, so he does everything well. If folks that just want to hate on Russell Wilson, here's the deal. If he was just system aided, he would not show up so positively in every one of those areas. Guys that are propped up by a system are spotty in those areas. What you'll find is they've got a strength and then they've got a weakness, weakness, strength. And you'll find a coach that will play to those two strengths really well and keep those other two weaknesses from showing up as much as possible. With Russell Wilson, it's the opposite. This is not about a scheme propping up Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is elite in every area. You don't see that from quarterbacks that, are just dependent on a scheme. Sorry, you just don't.
Yeah. No, it's true. You know, Russell Wilson is like a short, weaker arm John Elway, who basically carries this team in a lot of ways. And the other thing I think about is Pete Carroll. You talk about how everyone, you know, you see a lot of analysts get frustrated with the Seahawks because of their scheme. And I think of, you know, I wonder and just kind of ingest that maybe it's because, Pete Carroll comes across as this new agey old dude who, and that's actually his disguise for being like a Russian soldier, you know, I mean, in terms of the way that he, you know, it's like you think, oh, welcome to Never Never Land. And then, you know, it's like, here, take this kettlebell. You know, it's kind of that kind of approach with him. He's very much about physical play, about having that run game, being able to work off of that. And as my buddy Eric Stoner talked about to me privately the other day, he was talking about how, you know, the passing game is like, he gave this great analogy that just ups what Mark did, again, continuing to build off of what Mark did and saying, okay, so we got the chef and the baker. Well, with the passing game's like sugar. It's like the easiest way to get energy. But there are some people who can handle more sugar than others. Peyton Manning could probably eat straight up candy like all day long and still operate well, you know. But there are other offenses and quarterbacks that if you give them too much sugar, they crash. And that it's really about, as Chris Brown brought up, it's kind of like about macro versus micro. You know, in the macro, the expected points may not look good, but it's the micro adjustments that defenses have to make that actually are why the running game is important. And you see that with Seattle. You see that with New England. You saw that with Atlanta when they went to the Super Bowl. You see that in offenses like Kyle Shanahan's offenses. So, you know, speaking of that, let's take a look at Russell Wilson and his, you know, and what we expect. You said that you, you know, how many plays did you say that you felt like Seattle would run this year?
I've got them right at 950. You could easily argue for 975. Anywhere in that range is going to be, you know, a coin flip, but it's going to be right around there unless they play, you know, multiple overtime games or something. But I've got Russell Wilson at 456 attempts, which, you know, is low in today's, you know, by the standards of today, you know, it's very, very low, but it's also realistic given the way that this offense works. So I've got him at 8 yards per attempt. He's typically right around that or over that. I've got him at 64% completion rate, and I've got him at 3,648 yards, and his touchdowns per attempt, I've got him at 6.5%, which I don't give that kind of number out very often. You know, that probably is, I'm just look scanning. Yep, that's second on my list. I've got Mahomes at 7. You know, Mahomes obviously has a much better supporting cast than Russell Wilson, but 6.5% touchdowns per attempt is elite. But I don't have any problem giving it to him because he's one of the few quarterbacks in the history of the NFL that has shown that he can consistently do that. So that puts him at 30 touchdowns. I've got him at 9 interceptions. That's at right at 2%. You could argue I've got that too high. You know, like a 1.8% is probably more realistic. I've got him at 450 yards rushing, 1 rushing touchdown. So a lot of folks are really, you know, in the fantasy community, a lot of folks are fading Russell Wilson this year. And, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that's going to come out here and say for fantasy purposes, you should just dive headlong into a guy that's going to have 450 attempts. There's all sorts of ways regression could happen, but given his consistency in the areas that matter, yards per attempt, touchdowns per attempt, I still think that Russell Wilson's being undervalued. You know, I've, you know, been doing a lot of, you know, best ball type drafts lately. I mean, people are leaving him there in the 11th and 12th round, and I'm happy. I'm just like, okay, well, yeah. I'll just keep loading up on all these other things and I'll take Russell Wilson in the 12th. Is he your optimal QB1? No, probably not. I would say, you know, he's right there on the cusp of being in the top 12. But honestly, it's not a top 12 anymore, Matt. There's like a top 16 guys that I'm comfortable with. So 12 is almost like this arbitrary number people are forcing. Is he a QB12? I don't know, but really, whenever I look at it, there's 15 to 18 quarterbacks I'm comfortable with, and that's what I really care about. And Russell Wilson fits squarely within that. He's an amazing player.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's kind of funny because where we've talked about a lot of players having trap doors to their projections, I think Russell Wilson has like a explosive escape hatch that like propels him through the roof in a safe manner into the stratosphere. And that is if this offensive line can't protect and this defense suffers in a way where, because of the losses that they've had recently, that they're facing opponents who force them into passing mode more than running, and that they have to play more from behind. And then you get, you know, Russell Wilson, who's having to improvise and create, and then that raises his opportunities. But I'm similar to you. I have about 1,000 plays, actually maybe a little bit more than 1,000 plays total. In terms of what they're doing, in at about 48%, of it will be pass. That's kind of where I'm at this point, where I'm projecting a little bit more pass because of some of the early opponents. So I'm at 483 attempts, 302 completions for a 62.5% completion rate. So it's a little lower because I'm accounting for David Moore and DK Metcalf to an extent, and them being kind of younger players and more probably going to get more responsibilities to run different routes, where maybe he's learned the route tree, but now he's going to have to demonstrate skill with that full route tree that he's just learned against top defenders and different coverages that he may not be quite used to yet, that practice won't particularly have you taken care of. And the same goes with Metcalf. But 62.5%, I've met 3740 in terms of yards at 7.74 yards per attempt. So it's a little lower.
Even though you look at guys like Lockett, Metcalf, and Moore and think, ooh, they're big, you know, they're deep threats, and certainly that's the case. But then I wonder if they'll be a little more boom bust as a result of that. So I'm a little lower. I'm at 36 touchdowns, which is at 7.5% touchdowns per attempt, which is just under Patrick Mahomes' league leading 7.8%. So I'm right there with you on Russell Wilson, maybe a little higher than what the averages has been. I've met 1.4% on interceptions per attempt. So that's pretty low. I've met 7 interceptions, which I probably should raise a little bit given what I've just discussed with these receivers. And I've met about close to 70 rushing attempts, about 67 attempts, 376 rushing yards. I don't have a touchdown for him, which I probably should add at least one. I mean, seriously, it's Russell
Wilson.
Yeah,
he's been 3, 1, 1, 6, 1, 4. So, I mean, yeah, I think last year was more of an anomaly than anything.
Yeah. So we're roughly similar with some little differences that can be explained by kind of looking at it and going, hey, yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
I like what you said though about the receivers. I think there's going to be some potential inconsistency there. I think, you know, you're probably onto something with that. I mean, if you look at his completion percentage the year before, a 61, then he was at a 64, a 68, 63, 63. So he's had those years where he's more in line, you know, with what, you know, I think you said a 62 or a 63. I've got him at a 64. And I also agree on the yards per attempt. If you look at the only thing I want to say on the yards per attempt and the years where they've been dedicated to the run, which you're, you know, we're still the same as far as pass percentage, 48%. You've got him running a few more plays. But in the years where they have ran the ball well, he's had an 8 yards per attempt, an 8.3, a 7.7, an 8.2, and an 8. So he's very rarely been below, you know, 7.7 is his worst year in a year where they ran the ball.
Right. So, and that's kind of where I have him, is 7.74. So yeah, I hear so I think, you could be on the low end of the scale there. And I think that also kind of also links back to what's their receiving core like, and how are you going to be optimistic about their acclimation, or are you going to be skeptical about it? And I'm more on the skeptical end, I guess. But let's get into that and talk about some of these receivers here. And obviously, let's start off with Tyler Lockett. I mean, I'll begin, and I have him right now at 90 targets, leading this team, and catching 62 balls for a 15.5 yards per catch average, with 961 yards and 9 touchdowns. And I'm also giving him a rushing touchdown, and giving him about 15 rushing attempts for 80 yards, because he's been a guy that they've used in the running game. And I think that, you know, he's a guy that they will move the most around alignments. You know, he's the guy they're going to look for mismatches with. He's a guy that the team, that defenses are going to respect the most and wonder where he is. And he's a guy that they're going to use in various ways, both as a short, deep, and receiver and a runner.
Yeah, I'm pretty close with you on Lockett. I've got him at 22% of the targets. Doug Baldwin never in his time actually ever got really over that mark. Now, that's a different coordinator. So if you look at the way Schottenheimer handled, you know, things last year, from a target perspective, his running backs were 19%. Then you had 15% of the targets to the tight ends, and then you had about 55% roughly to the wide receivers. And the way he used Doug Baldwin last year was 21%, which is right around where Doug Baldwin had been used before. So I've got Lockett at 22%, but I'm with you. I've got, I think you said 15.5 yards per catch. I've got him at 15. So I've got him at 65 catches for 975 yards. And I've got him at 7 touchdowns, which is 25% of what I've projected for Russell Wilson. I think that the tricky thing with Lockett is, you know, and I think he's going to be fine. It's just he was so efficient last year. It's going to be hard to repeat that. But what he will see is probably more volume. You know, last year he didn't get 22% of the targets. So I've got him at 100 of the targets. And typically, again, you know, that's a player that, if people that care about fantasy are listening to this, you know, Tyler Lockett's a guy you got to take in the fourth or the fifth round, typically not a player that you would target if someone's only going to have 100 targets. But when you think about his skill set and the way it fits so perfectly with what Russell Wilson does, I've seen if fantasy owners are have that question, I have no problem with taking Lockett in the fifth round.
Yeah. And I'm with you. That's I've been taking him there pretty consistently.
It's kind of hard to get him there now. He's starting to preseason, you used to be able to get him there and sometimes even the sixth. Now he's in the fourth a lot.
Yes. Yes. If you're at that beginning turn in a serpentine draft at, you know, the 1-2 spot, you're often being tempted to take him there because he's the best option of the bunch oftentimes. And, you know, he's not going to get back to you. So yep. you're seeing that often come up. You know, I know everyone wants to hear about DK Metcalf, but let's tease everybody along just a little bit longer and talk about who might be the next most important receiver on this, you know, on this receiving core. And that's David Moore, who, you know, came out of a small school, needed a year, and then came out last year. And, you know, basically it was run in a straight line, jump up and win the ball, or just run under it in tight coverage, and Russell Wilson's going to get it to you. It may just land in your hands while a defender's draped over you, but if you can just hold on to it, buddy, you're going to be okay. And that's pretty much what David Moore did, and he did it pretty well last year. And then this year you're hearing he's learned all the positions, he's learned the full route tree, and they're going to count on him more as a guy that they can also move around a little bit. So with that in mind, you know, I'm not expecting him to suddenly become, you know, Tyler Lockett the second here as a result of all those things, because that's nice to say that he's learned these things. But, you know, I've learned a lot of music theory. It doesn't mean that I'm going to go out there and play, you know, complex, you know, some sort of complex harmony at a breakneck tempo out on my horn just because I've learned about the theory. I still have to show proficiency when I'm, you know, in a real life situation on stage. And I think that's where David Moore is in terms of his development. So I'm at 64 targets. I'm catching 34 of those passes for 544 yards for 16 yards a catch and 5 touchdowns. It's not bad. It's a pretty good total, but it's not something that you're looking at and going to say, ooh, he's a fantasy sleeper.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. I think David Moore, he was asked to do, just like you said, a specific thing last year, and he did that. Actually, he did that, you know, really well. 445 yards, 5 touchdowns. A lot of people, you know, forget how many touchdowns he scored. Tyler Lockett had 10, right, and 965 yards. So a guy that's still young in his, you know, career trajectory, like you said, comes from a small school. My gut says that he very well could be the number two guy on the team, just like what you're saying. And right now I've got him projected at, flipped over off of this thing. Yeah. So right now I've got David Moore right at 15%. I've got him at a 55% catch rate due to, you know, many of those targets will come further downfield. I've got him at 15 yards per catch. So I've got him right at 500 yards. I've got him at 5 touchdowns as well.
Okay. So, you know, then it gets a little murkier because we have Jerron Brown, who came over from Arizona, a former Clemson receiver who has been known for great speed. But when you watch his games, you don't see him like blowing by people and being this huge deep threat. You know, he's been just a pretty solid player, kind of a solid route runner who can deliver for you. And you look at him and how much of a role is he going to have? Is he going to be the third starter? Well, it seems like he's starting off as the guy in camp that's kind of like, he's our established guy. We're going to make DK Metcalf earn it. Can he earn it? And if he can, you know, play well enough, yes, he'll get a chance. He'll probably rotate with Jerron Brown and David Moore at different points of the game. So Jerron Brown right now, this is my effed up version of the projection that you're going to see, because I have Jerron Brown at 31 targets. I'm catching 20 balls for 231 yards, which is a meager 11.5 yards per catch. And then I don't know why I did this. I think it's because it's kind of like, this is where I had Russell Wilson at 36 touchdowns, and I haven't evenly spread out the touchdowns yet to where I think they should be. And I think that
that's part of the problem here is that because when I look at Jerome Brown, I gave him 6 touchdowns, and I'm looking at that and I go, I know that's not really what I think, that he's going to score 6 touchdowns on 20 catches. But I, you know, that's where it's
that would be a statistical outlier.
Yeah, it would be
that would be like Eric Ebron-ish.
Yes, yes. So I'm, you know, and when I look at where I've got the tight ends distributed, where I think what's happening here is that I'm expecting either a little more between Lockett, Metcalf, and Moore, and I haven't distributed that out evenly yet, where maybe I want to give Jerome Brown like 2 touchdowns, maybe, and the other 4 are going to be distributed between the backs and the receivers. And I haven't figured out exactly yet where I'm going to put it.
Yeah, this is one of those teams, you know, and I was actually reading the, I thought that sounded wrong earlier on Moore. So just a quick correction. I have 15%, which is 68 targets. And then I've got him at 38 catches, 565 yards, and I've got him at 6 touchdowns. And I basically didn't do much with Jerron Brown, Gary Jennings, or, you know, another guy that folks are talking about, and I know you talked about a little bit in the RSP, John Ursua, for who might be their slot guy. So honestly, those guys, I haven't attributed anything to them or Jerron Brown just because I'm waiting to see what plays out in camp. You know, I have them all underlined as need role clarity before I really do anything with them. So I just left those blank. The other, you know, the other guys that we haven't gotten to him yet, but I've got Metcalf and Nick Vanette, and then the 2 running backs, I've attributed, you know, targets to all of those guys. But as far as, you know, Brown, Ursua, and Jennings, I haven't done anything yet.
All right. Well, then obviously that means we've teased enough. What do you got for DK Metcalf and why?
Yeah, I've actually got him similar to David Moore, you know, so I've got him right there. Actually, I've got him the same. I've got him at 15%. I've got his catch rate a little bit lower because I do anticipate, like you said, David Moore is probably going to be used in a little bit wider variety. We'll still see his shots down the field. Just sitting here thinking through this, I probably have David Moore's catch rate too low. I've got it at 55%. It was 52%, I think, last year. And with him working more of the intermediate stuff, helping take over some of the Doug Baldwin's, you know, role, he probably deserves to be around like a 58 or 60%. But Metcalf, I've got at 50% because I do anticipate that they're pretty much going to put him on the outside and just have him, you know, work deep. And in this, in many offenses, you know, that is just kind of a courtesy. Hey, let's just keep the safety, you know, pushed off the line of scrimmage. We can always threaten you. In this offense, Russell Wilson, when he sees the right read and he sees the right matchup, he's going to throw it much more often than others. So it's not that it's not a meaningful role, but I've got him at 73 targets, but only 36 catches because there's even as good as Russell Wilson is, DK Metcalf still has work to do. He's going to often face some of the better corners working outside, but I've got him at 16 yards per catch. So that's 585 yards, and I've got him at 6 touchdowns.
It's so funny. I love doing this show with you because it's like you are so skilled at what you do with projections. And it's fun for me when I look and I go, I wonder what he's going to say about a guy. And we end up pretty close. And it makes me kind of feel good in a way.
Well, it makes me feel good, man.
It kind of makes me feel good to know that someone with your expertise, I'm looking at and going, wow, okay, we're, you know, I'm not so horrible at this after all. I've had some things that I've learned from you over the course of these that has been just really valuable. And, you know, I highly recommend if this is your first time listening to Dwayne and I do this show, check out his how I create projections or how I make NFL projections for offenses. That's available at the RSP site. And he does a really great breakdown of that. It's an evergreen piece that I highly recommend you look at. But DK Metcalf, I have him at a 51% catch rate. I had Moore at 53%. DK Metcalf, I have at 72 targets, 37 receptions. I have him at slightly higher yards per catch at 16.5. So I have him at 614 yards, and I have 7 touchdowns for him. And I think that part of that is that I think early on, defenses are going to play him straight up, and he's just going to whoop their behinds in certain situations until defenses figure out, okay, now what do we need to do against him a little bit differently and start to catch on and then give him challenges that he'll then have to overcome. And that's where it's going to prove interesting in terms of how good, because I think there's a ceiling for DK Metcalf that's higher than what we're projecting. Like, I think this is one of those guys, along with Russell Wilson, where it's very easy that if a guy like, I mean, think about Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin, if you ask me, isn't half the receiver DK Metcalf is. Kelvin Benjamin, I never thought that. Like, I always, Kelvin Benjamin got protected at the line of scrimmage at Florida State, where he played flanker. He was 2 to 3 yards, maybe 4 or 5 yards off the line of scrimmage, with defenders trying to play tight to him so that they hid him from press coverage because they knew he couldn't do it. They knew he didn't have great feet. They knew he didn't run good routes. They just threw the ball up and said, go get it, big man. And that's what he did. And they did that early on at Carolina. And then when more was expected of him, he just wasn't able to do it. Some of it was physical. Some of it was just, you know, really just about work and being able to improve and craft your game. And he didn't have that. DK Metcalf has those. DK Metcalf can get off press. I mean, DK Metcalf is, you know, you think about George Foreman. And here's the thing. Like, here's the boxing to football analogy. Off the line of scrimmage, there's a lot of hand fighting, and there's a lot of hand fighting is supported by footwork, just like boxing. It's really what goes on with your feet and legs to set up what you do with your hands. And so with a guy like Metcalf, people always think about hands, about speed and quickness, and the feet have to be quick, and he has to have great change of direction and all of that. Well, listen, there's a reason why 40 plus or however old George Foreman was when he came out of retirement and, you know, big bald headed, not Afro George Foreman, but big bald headed George Foreman, who's like out there fighting guys like half his age, slower than half, you know, like half their speed. And he's just knocking guys out and laying them out because he had that knockout power. He, you know, and where his feet went, he just could manhandle you even at a riper age, old age, you know, for a boxer. And DK Metcalf has like those George Foreman punches, you know, when he uses his hands on you, he's going to lay you out. And it's like, so when I look at him as a guy getting separation, I can see a scenario where you're looking at him and he might have 12 or 13 touchdowns this year. He could very easily come close to doubling the touchdown total that you and I projected for him, and do it in a way where he has 50 catches for, or maybe 55 or 60 catches in this, you know, offense. I would say closer to 50, like let's say 45 to 50, and still at like 800 to 900 yards. You know, in that range, I would say closer to like eight, say 50 for, he's not at 20 yards a catch.
We're having another moment of like ESP here. It's like, cause you know how I do a spectrum, right? I do a median, yeah, which is what we share on the show. You know, I don't want to spoil too much cause Metcalf is a guy we may do for the newsletter this coming month, but in his upside projection that I have, I've got him with an upside of 18% of the targets, right? We had him at 15, which would put him at 80 targets. And I also think the other area he could get efficiency is in his catch rate, which I have him at a 50. But paired with Russell Wilson, if he can come out, you know, and, you know, dominate like what you're talking about off the line of scrimmage, you know, I've got his upside at 60% catch rate, which, and if you give him a 17 yards per catch, remember a minute ago I had him at 16, so These are the upside factors. 18% of the targets, catch rate 60%, 17 yards per catch, and then easily, just like what you said, he could be up to 30%, right, of the targets, which would put him at 9 touchdowns, 837 yards, and 50 catches. Almost basically, yeah, Exactly what you just said. But you're right. The touchdowns, actually, you know, there is a better chance than zero that you could even say he could get to 10 touchdowns, right? There's a realistic outcome, that there's a realistic way for that to happen. And again, it's because he's paired with the perfect quarterback for what he can already do well out of the box in the NFL without getting better at other things.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, that's exactly right. You know, and so Metcalf to me is that guy that, it, you know, there is a floor there. I mean, there's a steep drop off floor if
things don't work out. You know, if he gets jammed early by physical cornerbacks and they, or they demand him to do more, you know, in terms of finding solutions, in terms of types of routes they need him to run, and, or they play a safety over top and they get really physical with him, it might be, he might end up being lower than where we have him. But I think because of the way Tyler Lockett is such a huge threat, that Tyler Lockett's actually going to be protecting DK Metcalf.
Yep.
Russell Wilson and his scrambling ability is going to help uncover DK Metcalf in certain situations. And Metcalf has probably already learned in camp right now, keep running. Just keep running to an open spot when your route doesn't break open. Unlike Derek Carr, as you mentioned, you know, unlike Derek Carr, where the receivers give up on their on him because they know he's not going to keep things alive well enough or find them. Russell Wilson is like, listen, you know, you may not see me anywhere, but keep an eye down, still keep an eye back in the pocket, because you're going to see the ball emerge from the pocket or outside the pocket from somewhere, and it's going to land in your chest.
It's like when I'm outside playing catch football with, you know, my boys, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, they'll throw an errant pass, or maybe I do, and it goes like over to the other side of the house. And it's always the joke where the person from the other side of the house, you don't know if they're still looking, you just like chunk it, right? And it pops up over the roof line, you know, and here it comes. But that's what it's like with Russell Wilson. He's sitting behind all these houses, right? These huge offensive linemen. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, boom, here comes this ball flying out. That's you better perfect. Still be running, and it's perfect, and it's going to hit you on a dime.
That is perfect. Yes, a perfect analogy. So, all right, we've covered the receivers. Let's give a little bit of love to these tight ends here, even though they might not be deserving of it from a fantasy perspective. But, you know, looking at their usage here, it's interesting because, you know, Nick Vinette, Ed Dixon, there's Will Disley. There's even, I think, Jacob Hollister still making a little bit of noise here and there. So, you know, right now for me, I mean, if I'm going to go over it, you know, I have Ed Dixon as the target leader, but he's not all that exciting. He's kind of a, you know, put him on a screen, put him on some routes that are similar to what running backs run up the seam, and he'll get open, catch it, and take it like 30 or 40 yards, trip over himself, and he should have scored, but, he, you know, he's still going to give you that 30, 35-yard gain once every 2 to 3 games, and then maybe even more on occasion. But I have a huge upside. I have a kind of an upside projection for him right now, and I'm going to lower it as we see what goes on with Will Disley and Nick Vinette and Jacob Hollister. But I have him at about 51 targets. I'm catching 40 passes for 410 yards and 3 touchdowns. And I'd say that that's like the ideal. I don't think that's anywhere remotely. I will probably be taming that back. Nick Vinette, I have him at 34 targets, 20 catches, 210 yards, for 3 touchdowns. And I also think that even if Ed Dixon doesn't become a bigger part of that offense, I would not put those extra totals on Vinette, because every year I hear Nick Vinette's getting better, and every year I watch Nick Vinette and I think he's getting a little better, but he's not the dynamic force that people thought he would be coming out of Ohio State. He's more of a blocker, occasionally can be used in the receiving game in the red zone, and he's not bad there. He's getting better after contact in terms of dealing with press coverage or tight man coverage, but he hasn't become a whiz at it. So then you have Will Disley, who, is he healthy enough to go? Was last year a fluke? And were they using him and taking advantage of him in ways that maybe they won't this year? I'm in a minimal look at 16 targets, 13 catches, 130 yards, and a touchdown. As you can see with the Seattle tight ends, I'm looking at basically 10 yards a catch. And Jacob Hollister, I've put minimal projections down for him just because I want to see whether he's actually a thing or not, because he doesn't seem to fit the Seattle program in terms of what they want from a tight end, which is a blocker who can go out on play action passes and get loose in the flat and get led downfield for a bigger crease. And occasionally maybe they'll split him outside and use him up the seam a little bit. And Hollister strikes me more as a wide receiver disguised as a tight end.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have any one of these guys particularly standing out. You know, I think either Vinette or Dixon, one, will lead, you know, the team. Last year, Vanette had 10% of the targets per game he played. You know, Ed Dixon was 5%, but he was really, you know, he was halted early on by a, I can't remember if it was a quad or what it was, or a calf or something, but early in the season, you know, basically he didn't really even become a factor, right, for like 6 or 7 games. And even when he did, it was only 5% target share per game. So Nick Vanette was still the number one in the offense. Disley, you know, even in those games where, you know, he kind of came out of nowhere, they used two tight end, you know, quite a bit, you know, so there's a chance for multiple guys to get on the field here. But his target share per game, he only played in 4 games, when you adjust for that, was 11%. So there's just, you know, they're complementary players, you know, they're complementary pieces. To me, none of them stand out as being something that you're going to really factor for, other than, whoops, we forgot about him because we're worried about, you know, what you said earlier, Tyler Lockett or this running back, you know, sneaking out of the backfield, and all of a sudden, you know, this, we left this tight end open, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't project any of them very high. And if you look at what Schottenheimer, you know, did last year, from a yardage standpoint, tight ends only accounted for 17% of the team yardage. If you look at the receptions, only 18% of the receptions. And I think that's, you know, Schottenheimer has used tight ends more in his career as an offensive coordinator. I think that's mostly just a reflection of there's not a lot of talent that demands the football. So, you know, I've got Vanette leading the way, but I've only got him at 10%. And then I've got, you know, another 5% spread across these guys. And it's just kind of waiting to see what happens in camp. Yeah, Hollister has had a little bit of a, you know, he was getting a little bit of love in the mini camps and things like that. But I'm with you. Even if we hear of him getting a larger role, I still don't see it being something where he gets over maybe 5, 6, 7%, you know, of the passes.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, yeah, I mean, let's now transition from the positions that, you know, in this particular team don't really matter all that much to the position that actually does matter on this team. No, seriously, let's go to the running backs. And the interesting part about this running back position is, you know, that there's likely a split here. Again, and a productive split, could be a very productive 1-2 punch, just like how Chris Carson last year was the lead player. Mike Davis also put up some pretty substantial production for that team. And then there was room for even Rashad Penny, the rookie, to come in and make some big plays here and there and have some decent weeks as a result of some of those nice plays. So, you know, looking at Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, who do you have leading here, and what do you make of this backfield?
I have Chris Carson leading the way, and with each passing day, I feel it's more and more cemented. And you're actually part of that thought process, you know, for me, Matt. You know, when I project offenses, you know, I spend a lot of time studying the coaches and roster construction and all these things that we've talked about in the past. But the other component, right, is talent. And whenever there's red flags around a particular player, and you've never really, it's not that you dislike Penny, but you've never been a big fan of Penny. You know, everything that I read about him in the RSP, it sounds like a lot of those things are rearing their head. And so when I see things like that, you know, where you or someone else that I trust, you know, that really watches these things, and they say, here are the things they're going to need to do better, and then you're consistently hearing those kind of things being a problem, that worries me. And so I like Rashad Penny better than I did last year, because obviously, like you said, we've got Mike Davis out of the way, and you brought up a really good point. If you look at the way that the Seahawks managed, you know, the snaps last year, they really used, like you said, a 3-way committee. So I'm just going to talk about the weeks where they were all healthy. And I'm not going to give you snaps. Let's, you know, what's more meaningful is, you know, rushing attempts. So in week 6, all three were healthy. It was 38% to Chris Carson, 16% to Mike Davis, and 24% to Rashad Penny. So you had 40% basically to Carson, you had 40% to the other two guys, and you got Russell Wilson running around for, you know, the rest of it. Then you've got week 9, 25. Well, and that's not really fair because Carson got hurt that week. But if you go to week 11, they're all healthy. It's 50% to Carson, 11% to Mike Davis, 23% to Rashad Penny. So Week 12, 57% to Carson, 14 and 14. Then you've got 45, 14 and 24. So the trend that you start to see here is Chris Carson, you know, was really somewhere between 50 and 60%, you know, each week. And the other two guys were combining for about 35%. And that's really where I'm at with these two. I've got Chris Carson right now at 53%, and I just moved him from 50. Originally, I had him at 50%, and I had Rashad Penny at 35%. And after all of the recent news that I've been hearing, you know, over the last 2 weeks with training camps going and how good Carson looks and how Penny continues to struggle, I just bumped that up 3% for Carson, and I dumped Penny down 3%. So I've got 53% of the carries to Carson, 33% to Penny, which still is fairly in line with what we saw last year. And this is assuming a third back doesn't work their way into this, right? Right now, we haven't seen any reports of that, but there's still a chance Seattle could try to do something like that, which would make me bring Penny down further. So that's 260 carries for Chris Carson, because that, I've got this team at 495 attempts. So if I'm looking across the rushing attempts for everyone I have projected, that's number one, I believe. I've got 488 for Baltimore. So, and, you know, back to Seattle, I've got 494. So that's six attempts. You know, I've got them in Baltimore basically as the top two rushing teams in the league. I've got 53% of it going to Carson. So that's 1,167 yards. I've got him at 55% of the touchdowns, which is worth seven. And then I've got Rashad Penny at 33% of the carries. Like I said, that's 161 carries. I've got him at 720 yards rushing, and then I've got him at four rushing touchdowns. Now, I'm a little low on their touchdowns, but that's because I do think Russell Wilson has the ability to take one or two away. And it's also, as good as this offense is, they still do a lot of their scoring through the air, as good as the running game is. You know, it's not one of those, a lot of times when you see a really good running game, you'll see, you know, teams that are getting 18, 20 rushing touchdowns. You just don't typically see that with the Seahawks. And part of it is due to the way their play volumes work and how well Russell Wilson operates once they get into the red zone, not just as a runner, but also he's very good in the red zone as a passer, just like he is at everything else. So 700 yards again is what I have for Penny, and I've got him at four touchdowns.
Nice. So this is interesting because, you explained kind of my viewpoints with Rashad Penny and Chris Carson. And a lot of that is just Penny's just an undisciplined runner at this point, who's not familiar with his own scheme. And it takes a very different mode of thinking. And if you haven't been used to running out of a zone scheme, then it takes a little while to get better at it. CJ Procise had that same issue. And so you look at this and, you know, I'm with you. I have Chris Carson currently at 53% of the touches on the dot, and I've had him there forever. But I have to say that part of it's, you know, part of that's going to be, that's actually a low number because I've kind of put room out there out of hope that a guy like Procise might actually get healthy and get his act together and get maybe somewhere close to 80 touches, 80 or 90 touches in this game, in this offense. But I know that's not realistic, so it really shouldn't be included on there. So if I take that out, Chris Carson's probably more at like 55 to 56% of the total. Really Seattle at about their running game at about 450 to 460 carries this year. So it's close to where you're talking about. But I have Chris Carson right now at an upside of 282 attempts, 1,315 in terms of yards, 1,315 yards, 10 touchdowns. And I have him at 37 targets, leading this group for 23 receptions, 186 yards, no touchdowns there. But he's a guy who's going to get you close to 1,500 yards total offense, I think, which is, I think, is fairly conservative for a lead back in a run heavy scheme. You know, cause you see top backs and you'd say, oh, they're getting 18, 19, 2000 total yards, 15 total touchdowns. And I think Carson's like on the precipice of that,
but not going to get it because, like you said, how the offense operates. But I do think he's going to be very efficient with his touches. He's going to get a higher workload than expected, and he's going to surprisingly lead this offense in targets. Not offense, but this running back depth chart and targets, because you've heard we need to get the ball in his hands more. He's more of a receiver than we expected. He's got great hands. And I think that, you know, the whole Rashad Penny working with Marshall Faulk thing sounds great. But this goes hand in hand with a podcast episode I recommend that I just recorded before Dwayne and I got on with Ross Cooper, who is a skills acquisition specialist. And we talk about that sometimes the guys who do train, you know, people train with, that doesn't necessarily make them an expert at as teachers. You know, you may learn some important things from them, and I have no doubt that Rashad Penny could learn some amazing things from Marshall Faulk, but it doesn't mean that the things that he most needed to learn to become a starter in the NFL were the things that Marshall Faulk taught him. You know, it's like Marshall Faulk might have taught him high-end theory on how to look at certain things and how to go about doing certain stuff, but then there are things that may have been lacking in Rashad Penny's game that just aren't translating, that Marshall Faulk didn't go over with him because Marshall Faulk's like, well, I presume that you're working on the fundamentals here, you know, with somebody else. Let's talk about the things that I really could give you the best, you know, the best of my skill set that you're going to learn the most out of. And that's great, but it may, you know, that it's kind of putting the cart before the horse. It's like, oh, let me tuck that, you know, if I'm Rashad Penny, it might be, let me tuck that in my back pocket and keep a good notebook of this stuff and go over it again. But first I got to really work on this stuff, you know? Right. And I think that's kind of where he's at. And that's why he's running into a little bit of trouble right now. I have him at 113 attempts, 559 yards. So I have him at a very efficient level of yards per, you know, yards per carry, but I think it's because Seattle's going to use him in ways that they've figured out, all right, here's what he is, here's what he's not. We're going to deal with it, because they're pretty quick to discern who works for them and who doesn't. You know, when you start off with Thomas Rawls and he does great, and then he doesn't do so well, and you're ready to move on with Chris Carson all of a sudden, or you're ready to move on from CJ Procise all of a sudden after he was a top pick, that tells me that this team sees very clearly who these guys are and aren't, and they don't get attached to draft stock. You know, they're not like, well, we paid him, well, we did this, we gotta see it out. No, they're like, nope, didn't work, he's not that, this didn't translate. Whose game does? All right, oh, this guy who's failed out of the San Francisco, yeah, let's go ahead and get him. You know, so I think Penny, they'll figure out ways to use him on selected gap plays, toss plays, plays to the outside, screen plays and draw plays, and he'll get you about three touchdowns. He'll get you more yards than what you'd expect out of the carries he gets. And I have him at about 25 targets, 16 receptions, 120 yards, and a touchdown. The guy who's kind of third on my list, who I think could usurp some of Rashad Penny's looks and maybe take a little more off of Chris Carson's plate than what I've given him, is J.D. McKissic. Because, you know, Travis Homer might be surprised. He's a very good pass catcher, has to become a better receiver, has to become a better runner and blocker, but he has some potential there. CJ Procise can't stay healthy. Bo Scarborough, I think, is gone now, even though I have him on my list, but I don't have anything projected for him. So McKissic's that utility guy that, like, you know, he's been hanging around. He's not great, but he's good at a lot of little things. And I could see him getting, you know, 57 attempts, 230 yards, and a touchdown. They like to use him in the red zone. He seems to be pretty good there. And give him like 30 targets, 16 catches, 110 yards, and a touchdown. So Penny and McKissic get a couple touchdowns. Carson doesn't, but Carson leads in yardage for receiving, leads in targets just slightly over McKissic and Penny. And that's kind of where I'm at with the Seattle running game.
Yeah, I have Penny potentially getting more work as the receiver. You know, so really he and Mike Davis got more of that last year than Chris Carson did. So that's something to definitely, you know, be monitoring as we work our way through preseason. I've got Rashad Penny at 10% of the targets versus 6% for Chris Carson. So I've got them both at an 85% catch rate, which is insane. But Russell Wilson, again, his accuracy to his, not just deep, his accuracy to his backs is phenomenal. So that's 23 catches for Carson, 39 for Penny, 185 yards receiving for Carson, 300 yards for Penny. And then I've got one receiving touchdown for Carson and 1.5 for Penny. And while we were sitting here, I actually was just going back and studying, you know, the Seahawks, you know, offense and looking at their touchdowns per attempt just under Pete Carroll over the last several years. And I had them at 2.5%, you know, as a team. And I just upped that because, and I think what had gotten me was I was looking at last year, he was at a 2.8% for the team. So again, this is touchdowns per rushing attempt for the whole team. The year before was it was abysmal. It was a 0.005, which is insane. And the year before that, though, a 3.2, then you had a 2%. But before that, when they were really committed to the run, 3.8, 2.8, 3.0, 3.4, 3.4%. So I just upped their from as a team perspective, you know, I put them at 15 rushing touchdowns as a team instead of, you know, I had them at 12 before, which bumps Carson's touchdowns right up to 9. And I just, based on sitting here listening and us chatting, because this is a team that I was actually, like I said, I was in the middle of tweaking whenever we started the show today. So the other thing I just did is I just went ahead and bumped Carson up to 60% of the rushing touchdowns for the team. And I've got Rashad Penny at 30%. That leaves 10% for someone else. And then Russell Wilson to grab one or two of those. That would put Chris Carson at, I've still got Chris Carson at 1,167 yards, 9 rushing touchdowns, and I'm going to leave his receiving yards where I have it so far, because I do think the area that if Penny continues to struggle in some of the ways that we've seen, I think the one area where he can still provide relief will be as a receiver out of the backfield, and they could choose to expand his role, you know, in that way. The one other thing I would say, you know, I agree with you that Seattle's very good about figuring players out and moving on. But they also haven't invested very highly in skill position players. You know, Rashad Penny has got to be, I'm sitting here thinking, he was a first round pick. When was the last first round pick we remember on Seattle's offense at a skill player? I can't even remember one. I mean, they traded for Marshawn Lynch, which was a first rounder. You know, that isn't what they gave away to get him, but he had been a first round pick. Who am I missing?
Yeah, and you're right. That's correct, because Paul Richardson was a second round pick, and they traded up into the second round to get him. CJ Procise was a third round pick. So even though he
Metcalf
was rated
year,
high,
third round. What was Tyler Lockett? He was like
Tyler
a third
Lockett
round pick
was
too.
Third or fourth round pick. Yeah, I think. Let's see what Tyler Lockett was. I never remember the draft stuff because.
Yeah,
you know me, I really could care less about draft stock. So Lockett is third round pick. Yes. So the highest guy was Paul Richardson before DK Metcalf. Well, Metcalf was a third round pick too. So Paul Richardson was their highest guy before
Penny.
Before Penny.
So Penny's kind of an exclusive company. So it will be interesting to see what they do. My gut tells me, my gut says that. While I totally agree with you, I think they're very good at figuring out who they like and moving on. I think with it being year two, you know, and given that they did invest. So I think where he could pick up, you know, some additional work, I do believe is in the passing game. And I think they need that, to be honest, because like you said, with Metcalf and with Moore, there's definitely upside, but there's unknowns with those players. Basically, everything right now is resting on Tyler Lockett's kind of teeny tiny shoulder pads, you know, so they need some relief in the passing game. We just covered the tight ends. I don't see it coming from there. So I think Rashad Penny, I think the other option is what you just said. So another back, whoever it is, whether it's McKissick, whether Process finally gets his stuff together, whether it's Travis Homer, there's a chance one of those other guys get involved in the passing game as well. Obviously that's what McKissick, that's his specialty, right? He's almost more like a slot receiver operating, you know, out of the backfield. So I think that'll be interesting, but this as a total, just to put a bow on, you know, these two guys, that would put a total of right around 1,350 yards for me, for Chris Carson. And it's right at 10 touchdowns. And, you know, so people that are listening from a fantasy perspective, one of the strategies I've started to deploy here lately, Matt, is in that third, in that fourth and fifth and sixth round, there's a lot of receivers I really like, but the runners drop off pretty quickly. And so I found myself lately, especially if I don't already have two runners, just taking Chris Carson in the fourth. He normally goes in the fifth, but I just feel like you said, I do believe there's some easy upside here for him. He could get up to 60% of these attempts and I wouldn't be surprised. But even if he doesn't, his median is a rock solid 260 carries. I mean, that's really good on a team we know is going to stay committed to the run. This is a team, you wouldn't even talk about this in the beginning, but I mean, they don't care what the game script is. If they're winning, if they're losing, if they're tied, they run the ball as much or more than any other team in the league in every single scenario. So it's not just a game script thing. This is what they want to do all of the time. And so I found that to be very comforting, especially whenever I'm looking at players, you know, that are at receiver that I think have a similar range of outcomes to Chris Carson. But I just feel so good about his. I just feel like, you know, I can take this. I can take a guy like Chris Carson and basically I'm going to sleep like a baby.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, you'll have people who comment on how coaches should call games are crying like babies when they see the Seattle Seahawks play.
Right.
So, but you know, when we talk about insights, and I think you just touched upon it, and we'll end this here and move on to Carolina in our next show. But, you know, my thoughts on this is Russell Wilson is an upside play with a solid floor where you can draft him for fantasy players. Chris Carson is a guy that you probably want to reach around early, or, you know, anywhere between 12 to 18 picks probably early on him, because if you're looking for a running back in the range that he's available, he's one of the better plays and has been a bargain really all summer because everyone's been on the Rashad Penny watch. And so if you've drafted early, congratulate yourself for having the foresight to understand that Penny, you know, is still a developing player. And then you have, in terms of unlocking upside, DK Metcalf's that guy that could be, you know, really be a difference maker and a contributor to a league winning team because of the fact that he could go anywhere from, he could give you that double digit touchdown upside and take over games for you and be the leading scorer on your roster, you know, a handful of weeks out of the year, and then still provide you pretty good production every week. That's his upside, but he does have a pretty downward floor. So he's a guy that when you look at him where he's being drafted, it's a risk reward scenario. And you have to look at him and say, do you have a list of players that you really want? And if he's added on that list, then you have to consider how many of them are high risk, high reward players, and how many are you really comfortable with having on your roster within the range that you've got to draft them and pick your spots. He's one of your pick your spot players.
Yep.
Tyler Lockett to me is a pretty much a lock. You know, his name is his surname is a good indication of what he is for you. Lock it in and play him because he's going to give you a lot of volume. David Moore, I think also his surname is fitting. You're going to feel like you're wanting more from him than what you're actually getting, but it's just good enough that you might feel okay with him as a flex play if you can time the right weeks with him. And then Rashad Penny, I agree with you. I think I need to up his receiving game, probably siphon that off of the tight end in terms of where I've projected these tight ends. And put him as a bigger factor because he really can catch the ball. And I can imagine him in the screen game being a devastating weapon for Seattle as a screen player or space player where, you know, kind of Alvin Kamara without the interior running skills just yet.
Yeah, and people forget last year, if he takes that role that Mike Davis had, I mean, Mike Davis had three different games, Matt, last year where he had a 23% target share, a 27% target share, and a 29%. Yeah. So, I mean, and Mike Davis was right at 11%. So that's really where my 10% for Penny came from this year, is because I just see him taking that role on. And it just makes sense from a standpoint of how else could they get Rashad Penny the ball? Because it's clear to me that, and it's sounding like it's pretty clear to them that Carson, you know, doesn't need to give up touches. to Penny. It's more like Penny just needs to take over what Mike Davis was doing. And if he can just, if Penny can hold on to his old role plus what Mike Davis had, it's still going to be viable in fantasy. He's just probably, he's going a little bit too early in some drafts. He's the kind of guy, he's the kind of guy that you want to pick your spot as far as, okay, if he goes in the sixth round of a draft, just be okay with it. Just move on, let it go. But there are drafts where he'll fall right into the, to potentially the late seventh round, and some, you know, different things happen in a draft. So be prepared to pounce, because he also has immediate upside if something happens to Chris Carson. And Chris Carson, you know, he's had his fair share of being, you know, dinged and having different things happen. He is going to be the guy that's going to get the first shot at, you know, taking on all the carries.
Well, this was a fantastic conversation about the Seattle Seahawks, and I love that we took a ton of time to do it, because it's one of my favorite teams in the league, so I'm biased, and I'm glad that we got to really kind of work through it in the way that we did. You know, again, you can follow Dwayne McFarland at Dwayne McFarland, you know, on Twitter. Obviously, you see his work at Fighting Chance Fantasy with the podcast he does with our man Brian Drake. Also, what you get at Football Guys with the projection spectrum is just fantastic work. And of course, what he's doing at the RSP, stay tuned for a joint effort he's doing with Jay Moyer and Mark Schofield on Derek Carr, and getting a chance to look a little bit at that. You can follow us at the RSP cast. If this is your first one, we've been doing a complete series of these teams, and we're a little more than halfway through. You can follow the RSP at mattwaldmanrsp.com and subscribe there. And of course, you can rate and review these podcasts at any of the outlets that you find it at. And it's pretty much available at every outlet that's a major one available. And you can always email me at mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com. If you have more extensive feedback that you'd like to provide, that would be helpful to us. So on behalf of Dwayne and myself, thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next week.